Welcome to the Manufacturing Executive Podcast, where we explore the strategies and experiences that are driving mid-sized manufacturers forward. Here, you'll discover new insights from passionate manufacturing leaders who have compelling stories to share about their successes and struggles. And you'll learn from B2B sales and marketing experts about how to apply actionable business development strategies inside your business. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Manufacturing Executive Podcast. I'm Joe Sullivan, your host and a co-founder of the industrial marketing agency Gorilla 76, where we help B2B manufacturers grow through revenue-focused marketing programs. When you make the investment in a sturdy digital backbone for running your manufacturing operation, your ERP, your QMS, your MES, you protect yourself from loss of tribal knowledge, you create efficiencies through process documentation, you set yourself up for smoother compliance audits, and ultimately you create an environment that can foster scalable growth. In this conversation, my guest, the co-founder of a highly successful ERP system designed specifically for machine shops, breaks it all down. Let me introduce him. Paul Van Meter is co-founder and chief marketing officer at ProShop ERP. ProShop is a revolutionary web-based and paperless ERP MES QMS system specifically designed for precision manufacturing industry. ProShop ERP partners with shops that seek to push the edge of technology by going completely paperless, strengthening and streamlining their quality and regulatory compliance, such as AS9100 and CMMC, combining all their shop software into one system and building robust business processes to achieve high growth rates, profitability, and performance. Paul holds a BS in industrial technology and founded a precision aerospace manufacturing shop directly out of college in 1997 after getting bitten by the manufacturing bug while building Formula SAE cars. The manufacturing company was a 5X Inc. 5000 recipient and was built around the idea of a franchise prototype, which allowed rapid scaling and led to a successful exit after achieving more than 75 employees and $11 million in annual revenue. Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Joe. I appreciate getting to chat with you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah, you and I kind of regrouped a week ago or so to just kind of flesh out this episode. And I was looking back at the time, when was it I had you on the show? It turned out it was episode 47. This one is episode 201. So it was probably almost exactly 3 years ago. So yeah.
Well, kudos to you for producing so much content.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a journey for sure. And I talk about this a lot on the show, but just one of the best decisions I ever made to launch this podcast. And it's been, 201 consecutive weeks of doing this. Yeah. And it's just been every week talking to somebody like you who is in or around the manufacturing sector. I'm just learning from the leaders in the space constantly and being the one asking the questions. It's just like, it's helped me just be a sponge and understand the space so much better. So love doing it. And yeah, it's great to have you back again as well.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I since the last time we talked, I launched my own podcast as well, which has been so much fun. And I just love the conversations that I have with guests. So I can totally get the sponge and just soaking up and having meeting people you would never have met and having great conversations. So looking forward to doing it again with you today.
Totally. Now, what's the name of your show, Paul? I know you've been doing it. And it's slipping my mind, but tell our audience a little bit about your show.
It's called Machine Shop Mastery. So you're watching the video, it's right there over my shoulder. But yeah, I interview machine shop owners of mostly larger, sort of more mature, successful shops, and just get their guidance on what the best move they've made, how they've grown their companies, the backstory behind them. And it's been so much fun.
Yeah. So you can relate. I mean, it's just that, when you're talking to your exact audience and hearing directly from their mouths, their experiences and their challenges and how they've overcome and everything, it's like, it's amazing market research for you, but it's also just a great way to build genuine relationships and to learn. So yeah, I just love it.
Yeah. And I think giving back to the industry, it's particularly in our little niche, a lot of shop owners are in their own little bubble and they don't have the ability to kind of probe and ask questions of shops that have gone before them, that have grown and been really successful. And so being able to hear it, directly from their mouths some of the best moves they've made, the best decisions, the challenges they're facing, makes them very relatable and just help sort of lifts up the whole industry by sharing their incredible wisdom.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, I knew who you were when we first talked a few years ago. Now I think it would be impossible to not know who you are being around manufacturing. I see you everywhere. I see Pro Shop everywhere. From everything I can tell, your business has been going gangbusters the last few years. And I would love for you to just start by telling us a little bit about your background, Pro Shop ERP, and specifically how things have evolved for you over the last few years as well since we last had you on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So to point out what you alluded to in the intro. So my partners and I started a machine shop right out of college called ProCNC. And we built the software product most of those years that we had that company strictly for ourselves, no intentions of selling it to anybody. But then other companies started seeing it, and our biggest machine shop customer asked us if we'd sell it to them. And that ultimately caused a shift of events to get us to decide to sell the manufacturing company and go into software. And when we spoke in 2001, we were sort of right in the height of COVID. Things were tumultuous, at best. But for us, actually, it was a period of incredible growth and opportunity. I think a lot of companies realized that some of their more paper-based, very much in-shop, in-office reliant processes had to evolve. And so through the COVID years, we quadrupled our company size, more than tripled our, in terms of clients, more than tripled our team. So yeah, we're a team of almost 100 now and have around 500 clients in 13 countries. So it's been a crazy last few years, but it's been a ton of fun. And being able to get deep in all these manufacturers is just a huge honor and something that we feel is really important because of how foundational precision manufacturing is to everything else in the world.
Well, congrats. I mean, geez, that's some crazy growth in a few short years. And you guys obviously have built something that people want, which has got to be a really rewarding feeling to see that kind of take off. So congrats.
It is. And I was talking to someone recently who, giving full credit where it's due, my business partners, co-founders, Kelsey and Matt, they were the ones that really, Kelsey was one of the founders of the machine shop, and Matt was the developer we hired to help us build this product, which we just wanted for ourselves. But this idea of this franchise prototype that you also mentioned in the intro, in many ways, our clients are utilizing this franchise model that Kelsey largely sort of conceived of, in conjunction with myself and lots of others on our team back in the day, and still today, all of our clients. But yeah, it's ProShop is much more of an operating system than it is just a software tool. And so there's now, hundreds of shops and will be thousands in the future that are sort of building their companies now around this concept of really standardized, repeatable processes, just like a franchise, of a restaurant, right? Something you could replicate over and over and have really easy, scalable growth because you're doing things in such a standardized way.
Yeah, really smart. I love it. Well, Paul, on the topic of, kind of software transformation and maybe even more of an operating system like you're talking about, I feel like anytime I talk to a manufacturing leader, sometimes we're talking about doing marketing work for them with my agency, and they're like, well, yeah, we know we need to do this, but we're going through a new ERP rollout, so I'm gonna have to talk to you in like 6 or 12 months or something, and there's bags under their eyes, and you can just see like the stress coming through. And so, I guess the question I have for you is like, why does it tend to be that way? Does it have to be that way? Tell us a little bit about just, your experience and being a pro in this space.
Yeah. I think there's lots of variables, but it comes down to two main principles, I think. The first one being change management. There, replacing an ERP is like a spinal cord replacement in a human, right? It is the backbone. It is the nervous system of everything that happens in a business. And swapping it out is no easy task, right? It involves every single department. It involves massive change. And humans are generally averse to change and like to keep things, doing things the way they know and understand and feel comfortable with. And the companies that we see have the most success with it are the ones that have the best change management processes. They are really aligned in their management and executive teams and across the entire organization. They are the ones that are the most supportive of the team members who are nervous about change, who, you know, so these executives and leaders, they listen to them. They talk about the why they're doing this. They, you know, really support them through the change. And that is such a stark contrast to companies that don't have alignment, who, you know, they have team members that are digging their heels in and not changing and not being open to, you know, doing things a different way. And it just makes all the difference in the world. So that's the first and probably the most important one. The second one is the actual technology itself. You know, from all the, you know, implementations we've done and the vast number of different systems we've replaced, there is often some real significant factors at play in the actual functionality of the product they're trying to implement, right? And especially for, you know, these precision manufacturers, and yes, we do largely serve machine shops, but we have a wide variety of customers, from OEMs to fabricators to composites companies to companies that are in, you know, electronics manufacturing or cable harnesses or making, you know, machine builders. The common elements is they're doing really complex manufacturing processes, usually in a regulated industry. And when it comes down to it, the nuts and bolts, like the actual workflows, the actual software features matter a lot, because if you are trying to manage complex manufacturing with something that's maybe a little stronger in accounting, but not very strong in manufacturing, which a lot of ERPs would fall into that category, you've run into some, you know, really challenging situations where the software doesn't have features and workflows that the company does every single day that are the backbone of their operations. And that can lead to a lot of workarounds, a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of other little systems, and that can be truly challenging. So the takeaway there is just to make sure that the entire organization is represented in the decision-making of what software product to adopt, whether that's ERP or something entirely. It can't just be one department that's leading the charge and having the rest of the company sort of take what they get and have to deal with it.
Yeah, good stuff there, Paul. You know, I think something that is directly related to this is, you know, that I know you and I think we talked about this a while back when we had you on the show the first time, was just this idea of tribal knowledge being tied up and in silos and not having processes baked into the software systems, and all of a sudden you have people, you know, doing things their own way, or someone leaves the company and the process that was just in their head is now gone and everybody's left to figure things out. So can you kind of talk about where that fits into having a true operating system behind your business?
Yeah, absolutely. That is, I mean, there's lots of reasons why that exists. I think part of it is just leaders not realizing the importance of having systems to capture all of that and having a culture around people being willing to share. Because some employees feel that when they can protect the knowledge of what they do, that leads to better job security. And I would argue that's generally, maybe in some rare cases, might help a little bit, but generally the employees that share the most, that are the most sort of thought leaders within the company, that become the most valuable resources, they do the best. They're the ones that are promoted. They're the ones that sort of move up the chain. But this concept of having siloed information is often a result of having systems that don't handle all of the company's processes well enough. So to my point I made, you know, about choosing the right system for whatever you happen to be doing, if you have something that is particularly strong, for example, in finance, but it doesn't have any quality processes built in, quality assurance or quality control, then you're going to have to buy something else, build something, use paper, use spreadsheets, whatever it might be, to manage the necessary activities in that part of the business. And that will often turn into something that is not visible to other departments in the company. And you can have these silos just pop up sort of by necessity, because they got to run that part of the business. You got to have something in place. And if you got to just build something from scratch or do whatever that isn't really connected, it's just a natural outcropping of a system that doesn't really handle that well. Often those are paper-based processes because that's low-hanging fruit. It's a very easy thing. I'll just grab a sheet and make a Word document and print it off and have someone fill it out. But like you said, especially these days, you know, in 2024, I'm sure everyone has heard the term the silver tsunami. We're deep in the middle of it. It boggles my mind, but there's 10,000 baby boomers retiring every single day. And the average age in, you know, manufacturers is old. It's, you know, it's in the late 40s, 50s, 60s even. You know, there's a lot of folks that are getting to retirement age that are taking vast amounts of knowledge, industrial knowledge with them. Intellectual property even, and whether they're retiring or whether they're switching jobs or who knows what, it's a significant challenge when a company loses that. And so having an initiative at the highest level, you know, from the leadership down to, you know, survey and capture and share and disseminate this knowledge across their entire team, I think has to be one of the biggest priorities in any manufacturing company these days, or any company really at all. Obviously, manufacturers are your audience. So yeah, it's just so essential. There's significant risk to companies if they lose this knowledge, which is, you know, it's challenging to capture it all, right? It's not super easy. Not only just the logistics of having places to put it that's then easily accessible to other people, but just the process of, you know, sitting down with folks or having people shadow them or document in one way or another, whether it's text or video or photos or whatever, there's got to be ways to capture all that. It's a big important process that people should be paying attention to.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. I want to let a couple of our strategists at Gorilla 76 tell you about something pretty cool that we're doing right now for marketing folks in the manufacturing sector. Peyton and Brendan, take it away.
So I'm Peyton Warren.
And I'm Brendan Forrest.
Twice a month, we host a live event called Industrial Marketing Live.
Right now, we have a group of 50 plus industrial marketers from a variety of manufacturing organizations that meet up digitally to learn, ask questions, network, and get smarter.
Every session has a designated topic. And one of our team members at Gorilla 76 opens up by teaching for the first half hour or so. Topics have included how to do a better manufacturing webinar, getting started with paid social on LinkedIn, how to optimize your website for conversions, creating amazing video content, and so much more.
After we break it down, we open it up to Q&A so we can help you apply all of this in your own businesses.
This is pure value, no cost, no strings attached, no product or service pitches, just a 100% unadulterated learning experience.
And on top of these live sessions, we've also opened up a Slack channel where attendees bounce ideas off each other and learn together between sessions.
We're building a true community of manufacturing marketing professionals here. So if you or someone at your company has the word marketing in his or her job title, please consider telling them about it. They can visit industrialmarketinglive.com to register.
We'd love to see you there.
Do you see the mind shift or the mindset shift like happening more quickly in the last few years to digitize things? Because it feels like there's some urgency here. I mean, especially you look at the what you said a few minutes ago, 10,000 baby boomers retiring daily.
Yeah.
Is it starting to happen compared to, you know, early stages of after you launched ProShop?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I would say that we've been doing paperless shop floors since the early 2000s. But, you know, when we first launched our company in 2016, I would say it was kind of early adopters that, you know, were on board with and liked the idea of, you know, digitizing all their processes. But yeah, today, I think more and more people recognize that it is absolutely an essential, you know, the industry is going that way, their competitors are going that way, and they'll be at a significant disadvantage if they don't. I mean, let alone the competitive landscape. But, you know, most importantly is just the actual, you know, day-to-day operations of their own companies are considerably challenged if they don't capture this knowledge. You know, even just someone going on vacation and having a piece of equipment have to sit, or a job, you know, that can't run because the person that's on vacation is the only one that knows how to do that. You know, I was interviewing a customer recently, and they talked about this. It was a casting, and they called it the Jimmy casting, because Jimmy was the only person that knew how to do it. And, you know, if Jimmy was on vacation, that job didn't run. But more recently, they documented it, created pictures, you know, did a great job of making sure that anyone could walk up to a machine, pull up the instructions and set up that job. And indeed, the most recent, you know, time they ran it, pretty new employee of only a few weeks, you know, successfully set up and ran that job. And it'll forever be known as the Jimmy casting. But it's a great example of something that was a tenuous situation and is now so much easier now that they've documented it well.
Paul, shifting gears a little bit here, I wanted to get into the topic of compliance with you a bit today, because I know this is something you've got a lot of experience with. You've been helping companies get certified for AS9100 on really short timelines, I believe, just from what I've seen from you and heard you talk about. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, what's our audience need to hear?
Yeah, well, I guess the biggest thing is that I don't think I've ever seen a greater need for companies to gain these certifications. The gap between sort of the shops that are able to serve those industries that require, you know, higher level certifications like ISO or AS9100 or 13485 for medical devices, you know, the gap between the available opportunities to those shops and the shops that don't hold those certifications is just getting wider and wider. You know, business is not getting easier. It's getting more complex. It's getting more regulated. And quite often companies that don't have those often are just not in the opportunity to bid. They're just not in the game. So we're seeing a lot of demand, a lot of requests for companies that want to get these certifications. And historically, kind of like ERP implementations, it is a many months, if not year long plus process to document all the company's processes, to understand what the standard is requiring that you do, building operating procedures and documentation to show that you are running your company the way that the standard, you know, says that you have to. And the standards are not exactly prescriptive about how you do it, but the processes you create have to demonstrate that you're, you know, meeting the requirements of the standard. And, you know, for most companies that includes, or for many at least, it includes, you know, working with a consultant that might be an expert in, you know, that certification. And they often will come with their own, you know, sort of systems for, you know, templates and forms and, you know, documentation for, you know, generic documentation for how a company might, you know, show they meet the requirements. But generally speaking, of course, that means that the QMS system or the business management system, more precisely, is kind of outside of the ERP tools because they're not really well integrated. And that just naturally, you know, and understandably requires quite a bit of effort to try to merge those two together, because kind of like we talked about earlier, an ERP is the spinal cord of the system. It is the whole process that runs the whole company. So it can be just very time consuming and cumbersome. And then even once you gain that certification, just a real overhead burden to maintain all the documents and keep the forms current and make sure things are, you know, done properly. That usually means that audits, whether they're recertification audits or just, you know, gap audits, are often weeks long prep time and scrambling to kind of clean things up and make sure the auditor is not going to have a bunch of findings on you. And that just is expensive and time consuming. So what we, you know, when you introduced ProShop, you know, we're ERP, QMS, and MES. That QMS component is basically, you know, a deeply integrated QMS system, totally sort of interlinked and enmeshed with the ERP and MES functionality. So, you know, when you take a new order, for example, you have a contract review form built right into the page itself, right? And contract review is an important part of ISO or AS. Or if you're doing, you know, you're doing aerospace and you need to complete an AS9102 form, right? That's embedded in rather than being a whole standalone separate system. So if you can combine all the systems, the sort of business systems and the quality systems into one sort of cohesive, you know, intermesh system, it's just much easier to maintain overall. And then the process of actually going out and getting a certification in the first place means that instead of possibly working with a consultant to, you know, adopt these, We have team members in-house that really understand, of course, how ProShop works and understand the whole QMS sort of system, you know, what the standard is all about and what auditors are going to be looking for. But the last piece of the puzzle is what we call our sort of flying start content. So most of our customers do, you know, choose to tack this onto their ProShop system. And it basically is, you know, an AS compliant QMS already embedded into the modules that always come with the system. So rather than having a third party consultant that has their own system, they're adopting a set of processes that are already perfectly aligned with the way ProShop works. And because they were designed and built around the operations of the system. And so those kind of three pillars, you know, the integrated modules, the content already built in, and then using our teams to, you know, to help kind of piece all together and go for that audit, means that we have taken, you know, last year we did a project, we actually made a little documentary video, which was really fun, of a customer that did this whole process in 4 months. And that was pretty quick. But then we have done two or three of them now in 2 months. And we just finished a process, believe it or not, where we had a client start their ProShop training on a Monday and doing QMS implementation for AS9100 on the same Monday. So we had two people go on site. One was their normal ProShop trainer. The second person was our QMS specialist. The following Tuesday, they had their stage one audit for AS9100. And that Thursday and Friday of the second week, they passed their stage two audit with no findings. So, you know, when I've seen actually that shop owner posted a question on LinkedIn, like how fast do you think is feasible or realistic? And there was all sorts of answers from many months to, you know, whatever. But one thing that people quite rightfully pointed out was that, you know, if something is too fast, it's probably going to be not very complete and not very well understood by the company and possibly difficult to maintain. And while I will readily acknowledge that a 2 week time frame is like, that's really pushing the bounds of what's even reasonable, and I would not recommend that for most companies, the fact remains that those three principles that we talked about in the first place of having everything so integrated and having the documentation already well aligned with the business processes, that makes it incredibly robust, right? And most of the auditors, if not all the auditors that go visit our clients, say that this is the most sort of complete and robust and easy to understand and easy to audit system they've ever seen. So it's not as if it's just a really generic sort of surface level QMS that is hard to maintain and not very effective, because coming back to probably the main reason why a QMS is so critical is, yeah, it helps open doors, but the main thing is that it helps you run your business better. Right? It makes you more profitable. It makes you more process driven. It makes it easier for the owners to work on the business rather than in the business. There's so many benefits to, you know, running your company with standardized processes that we hopefully are providing the best of all worlds, right? A QMS that is deeply integrated, really lightweight to maintain in the future, because it's not separate, but yet allows just almost unbelievably lightning fast certification processes to happen. So it's fun to just push the bounds. We actually tried to get the Guinness Book to come document what we were doing, but they're like, it's too subjective and we don't have the staff to do that, and it's too deep. So anyway, I still would ask anyone if they've ever heard of something as fast, I'd love to hear about it, because I think we set a world record.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to say. It sounds like you're setting records here. That's pretty cool to hear though.
Yeah. And we'll be producing a video for that one in the next month or so as well. So
yeah, amazing. It's really cool. Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of said it yourself a minute ago here, this idea of working on the business rather than in the business. And I feel like everything we've been talking about here today kind of points at that, right? It's having that backbone in place for your business that gives you, I guess, the venue for documenting processes, for, you know, storing all this tribal knowledge, for, you know, helping you through the certification process and making sure all that's accessible and usable. And when you and I did our first episode a few years back, I think that was kind of the theme there, was this idea of working on the business rather than, you know, a business leader getting stuck in the day-to-day minutiae and doing the work. Like, you know, you've kind of answered that question, but, you know, as a way to wrap it up, I'd love to hear you just sort of talk about that topic and talk about how you'd advise business leaders in the manufacturing sector to find the time and to, you know, really commit to working on the business rather than just in the business.
Yeah, sure. Well, this has been a theme that I've talked about for years now. From the way that we even just designed our own company, the machine shop back in the day, was largely around this concept, which is not our concept. I'll give full credit to Michael Gerber, the author of The E-Myth Revisited, which I recommend pretty much every time I'm on camera, because it's such a easy to understand and foundational concept of, you know, people that are really excellent at a craft, like being a tool and die maker or a machinist or a fabricator or someone that, you know, that's what the business does. Just because they're great at that does not mean they're going to be great at running a company that does that thing, right? And in the earliest days of our company, I was certainly guilty of it myself. Just, you know, I'm a problem solver. I'm smart. I can get in there and fix this thing rather than trying to delegate it to someone else that might not do it quite as fast as I would or quite as efficiently as I would. But the idea that someone does it even at an 80% level and you don't have to do it yourself and you can be working on something more valuable to the overall growth or success of the company, that is a significant win. So getting that mind shift set that it's better to have someone else do it, even if it's not quite as excellent as what you would do, is far more scalable than you trying to tackle everything yourself. And so that's a lesson that's harder for some people to learn than others, but it's a totally essential one to onboard and really kind of understand down at your DNA level. And so, and I think, you know, from 3 years ago to today, it's even more important. You know, as I said, you know, business is not getting simpler. It's getting more complex. It's getting more regulated, more challenging, more demanding, quite honestly, and more competitive. You know, there's a lot of manufacturers out there, and there's a lot of companies trying to do the same thing that you're doing today. And, you know, the main way that companies grow and succeed is by having team members that can own and execute on, you know, the vision and mission of, you know, the founder or management of the company. And by being able to have systems in place that make that easier, so it's everything's not a home cooked meal, to making sure you're delegating, you know, and hiring and supporting and promoting the people that can execute on that vision and mission of the company, is that's what really differentiates, you know, some companies from others, and how some companies tend to, you know, grow and thrive really quickly, and others, you know, are just either slower growing or and I just also want to point out, there is nothing at all wrong with a very small business that is, you know, happy to just be at that size, right? There's lots of really fantastic businesses out there that are 2, 3, 4, 5 people. And it's a nice lifestyle, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. It's not like every company has to grow and scale, right? That's just not for everybody. In fact, I'd say there's times, you know, in our own machine shop days, when we were bigger, we were less profitable than when we were smaller, and we certainly had a lot more stress. So there's something to be said for the right size of company. But yeah, it's for those that do have, you know, the aspirations to really grow. And quite honestly, for even those that don't, being able to delegate and work on the business, or even work less in the business. We have a shop client of ours that is just a small little shop, you know, maybe a dozen people or so. But after putting some of these principles in place, the owner was able to significantly step back, go on more trips with his family, spend more time, you know, hunting and spending time with his kids and wife, or doing whatever he wanted, while the business, you know, kept growing and even getting more profitable than when he was there delegating, trying to run the business every day. So there's just so many opportunities to have a better quality of life, whether that's a personal thing or just, you know, for the whole company, when leaders can embrace this idea of working on strategic, more value-added things and letting their processes and team pick up the rest and run with it.
Yeah, I packed a lot of really good stuff in there. The term we use in our company a lot that I think we got from Gino Wickman at Traction or EOS, yep. if you know that, is delegate yep. and elevate, right? What can you push down? You pretty much set it yourself so that you can, you know, open the time and space for you to work on the things that you can work on and that you really need to be the one working on. It's something that we've struggled with. I've been running my company for almost 18 years, and it's you know, different sizes of my company, different versions of my company. It's the challenges have been different, but it's always been a challenge to like find that space and time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To let go of things. And something by the time this episode goes live, that we will have implemented, that our leadership team decided on, is we're a service-based business. So, you know, it's different than when it's just shop floor running and a production line running. But for us, it's going to be no meeting Fridays is going to be what we're going to experiment with. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of the problem is, well, for my people who are doing the work, it's, you know, not having 4-hour chunks that they can ever find to like sit down and get in the zone and do their work. For our leadership team, myself, my business partner, and some of our directors, it's getting pulled in so many directions, having to put out fires, being in status meetings and strategy calls and things where you literally can't find more than an hour throughout your week to sit down Absolutely. And work on the business, right? And so we're going to experiment that way and say, Fridays, we have 8 hours every week where we can carve this time and we can work on the things that, you know, you would classify as working on the business. And I can't wait. I'm excited. I can't wait to be able to go into my weekend thinking I just spent a full day doing the most important things my company needs. Maybe this will fail. Maybe it won't work, but we're going to try it. We're rolling it out across all 35 people at our company starting in a few weeks here. So we'll see how that comes out.
Kudos to you. Yeah, kudos. Yeah, that is easier said than done. But yeah, I find, you know, it's easy to sit to talk about it. I also find myself with precious few hours in a week to actually just sit down and do work.
Yeah,
that's not putting out a fire or being in a meeting or whatever. So yeah, that's definitely keep us up to date on how that goes and what you had to put in place to make sure that you could keep that running. Because that's a cool, inspiring idea.
We will see. Right. Again, could be a complete failure, but you don't know until you try it. So
awesome. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, Paul, great conversation today. Really appreciate you coming back on, but really, really exciting to see kind of just to watch you online on LinkedIn, see what your company's doing. You've had some amazing growth. You've, like I said earlier, clearly you've got a product people want. And, you know, I think that's something to be super proud of. So congrats on what you've been able to achieve.
Thank you. It feels really important to us. As I said before, you know, manufacturers are the foundation of everything that happens in the world. There's no way, you know, all the technology we have, all the things that the people buy or use, or whether it's flying somewhere or, you know, going out on a walk with a pair of tennis shoes on your feet, right? None of that would happen without manufacturers. And so it's really important to support those companies and those people, those entrepreneurs. And I can't think of a more fun way to spend my work days.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, tell our listeners where they can learn more about ProShop and podcast as well.
Yeah. Oh, ProShop is easy. It's just proshoperp.com or, of course, LinkedIn. I'm easy to find. Thankfully, there's no other Paul Van Meter with the same spelling of my last name, M-E-T-R-E. So I'm pretty easy to find there. And then my podcast is just machineshopmastery.com, and it's on every platform that's out there as well.
Awesome. Well, Paul, appreciate you doing this today.
Yeah, great, Joe. Appreciate all the thought leadership that you and your guests bring. And I appreciate you doing what you're doing so consistently for so long now. It's hard to do it. So kudos to you for getting it done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Awesome. All right. Well, Paul, thanks again. And as for the rest of you, I hope to catch you on the next episode of The Manufacturing Executive.
You've been listening to The Manufacturing Executive Podcast. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you'd like to learn more about industrial marketing and sales strategy, you'll find an ever-expanding collection of articles, videos, guides, and tools specifically for B2B manufacturers at gorilla76.com/learn. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.